hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
If you want to be the number one player in the world, you have to give everything. You have to accept to suffer because this Grand Slam was the most painful physically and mentally Grand Slam that I never played. What was clear was not to show anything. Keep fighting, give everything, and try to win it.
That's Stan Wawrinka, who beat the number one tennis player in the world and won the U.S. Open men's singles title in New York City. In a nearly four-hour slugfest at Arthur Ashe Stadium, Wawrinka defeated Serbian star Novak Djokovic in four sets to win his third career Grand Slam title. The final score from New York, 6-7, 6-4, 7-5, and 6-3. Wawrinka also beat Djokovic in the final of last year's French Open. His other Grand Slam trophy came in 2014 when he beat Rafael Nadal of Spain in the final of the Australian Open. So Wawrinka is now a perfect 3-0 in Grand Slam finals. 3, by the way, is also Wawrinka's current world ranking. Andy Murray of Britain is number 2, and Djokovic remains number 1. Djokovic says Wawrinka definitely deserves to be mentioned in the mix of top players. The U.S. Open is the year's final Grand Slam event. At the post-match news conference in New York, Wawrinka was asked about his plan for 2017.
The only plan is trying to push myself the maximum to be the best player I can. I'm not good enough to start the year and say, okay, I'm going to win a Grand Slam this year. No, I'm trying every day, day by day, practicing hard, trying every match to win. I think the result will come because I'm doing that every day, because I'm fighting with myself to improve, to be a better tennis player, because I have a great team behind me who's pushing me every day to try to be a better tennis player, and I think this year I'm playing way better than last year.
For his part, Novak Djokovic will have to settle for two Grand Slam titles this year, the Australian Open and the French Open. Djokovic says he lost his nerves in the important moments against Wawrinka, while his Swiss opponent kept his cool.
I just didn't capitalize at all on my opportunities. I had plenty of them, break points. It was a terrible conversion of the break points, just terrible from my side. And, in the matches like this, if you don't use your opportunities, the other guy comes and takes it. And that's what he did. So that's why I said he was more courageous, because he stepped in and played aggressive, where I was kind of more waiting for things to happen, and that's it.
Meanwhile, in the women's singles final at the U.S. Open, Germany's Angelique Kerber beat the Czech Republic's Karolina Pliskova in three sets. The final score from New York, 6-3, 4-6, and 6-4. It was the second Grand Slam title of the year for Kerber, who also won the Australian Open. The 28-year-old Kerber is also the oldest woman to reach the number one world ranking for the first time. She overtook American star Serena Williams in Monday's women's world rankings. After beating Pliskova, Kerber talked about some of the changes she made to her game this year.
I was really trying to improve a lot of things. First of all, of course, my fitness, and then to being more aggressive and go for it when I have the chance, not just hitting the balls over the net, just playing my game, because I know that when I'm practicing, I can be aggressive and just make the transfer on the match court, that was the challenge. And also mentally, to being more positive, a little bit more stronger, and just focusing on the moment I am on court.
That's Angelique Kerber of Germany, the world's new top-ranked women's tennis player. And Angie spoke after winning the U.S. Open title in New York, a place Jay-Z is familiar with.
Yeah, I'm up at Brooklyn. Now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to the Narrow. But I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra. And since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem. All of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's. Took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus. Driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm up that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my top. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely from.
From New York, let's go to Carmel, Indiana, where U.S. Open golf champion Dustin Johnson of the United States has won the BMW Championship Tournament. Johnson closed with a 5-under par 67 to beat British golfer Paul Casey by 3 strokes. It was the 3rd title of the year for the 32-year-old Johnson. And he was awarded a first-place prize of $1,530,000. After lifting the trophy, Dustin Johnson talked about his performance.
Today was a great day. Paul really, played well and made it quite interesting, especially, after the 3rd hole we were tied at 17. I birdied the first, and then bogeyed 2 and 3. He birdied 2 and 3, so... I felt like it was pretty tight all day. I got a little momentum going on the front, birdied 4, 5, 7, and 8. Hit some really nice wedge shots in there on a few of them, and, then birdied 11 again, and then, 15, he rolled in a nice eagle putt, and then I made one right on top of him. That was kind of the turning point there.
Hey, Dustin, what's the biggest difference in your golf game right now?
The big difference is my wedge game. My wedge game's improved a lot, so I know if I'm driving it well and I'm hitting it in the fairway and get a wedge in my hand, I'm going to have good looks at birdies. And, today I hit a lot of great wedge shots, started on the first hole and, continued to hit some really nice ones all day. Had, quite a few really short birdie putts, and, that was the big difference. And then, obviously, the putter's been working pretty well this week.
Thanks, Dustin. That's American golf star Dustin Johnson speaking after his 3rd title of the year in Carmel, Indiana. Johnson is currently number 2 in the world golf rankings. Australia's Jason Day is number 1.
Voice of America.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I mentioned that big first place prize that U.S. Open golf champion Dustin Johnson received in Carmel, Indiana. Well, the U.S. Open tennis champions received more than double Johnson's amount in New York City. That's right. The men's and women's singles champions in New York, Stan Wawrinka and Angelique Kerber, each received $3.5 million. A total of more than $46 million was awarded at the U.S. Open, making it the most lucrative Grand Slam tennis tournament in the world. In pro boxing, undefeated world middleweight champion Gennady Golovkin, a.k.a. Triple G, successfully defended his titles over the weekend in London. Triple G stopped local favorite Kell Brook of Britain in the fifth round of an action-packed clash. Fighting in front of a sold-out crowd of more than 19,000 at the O2 Arena in London, Brook's corner threw in the towel in the fifth round, apparently worried about their fighter's health and vision. Triple G broke Brooks' left eye socket in the second round, and after the fight, Brooks said he was seeing four Triple G's in the ring. Kind of blurry vision there. Kell Brook was scheduled to have an operation on his eye Monday in his hometown of Sheffield, England. The stoppage was Golovkin's 23rd consecutive victory by knockout or technical knockout, and it was his 17th consecutive world title defense, as well as his 36th consecutive victory. Kell Brook, meanwhile, moved up two weight classes to fight Triple G. He suffered his first professional loss as a prize fighter after 36 straight victories. Meanwhile, here in the United States, in the eastern U.S. city of Reading, Pennsylvania, American Robert Easter Jr. scored a 12-round split decision victory over Ghana's Richard Comey to win the vacant International Boxing Federation World Lightweight title. Comey said he felt like he won the fight and landed the more accurate shots. He said it's very hard to win against an American on his home soil, and he deserves a rematch. For his part, our reigning prince of pugilistics, Namdi Hollywood Moeta, said Richard Comey had the decision stolen from him. And we'll hear more hard-hitting commentary from Namdi later this week. It was Richard Comey's first loss after 24 consecutive wins, while Easter improved to 18-0. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers former American two-time world champion boxer Bobby Chacon, who died September 7th at age 64. Chacon died after suffering a fall while in hospice care for dementia. Bobby Chacon won world titles in the featherweight and super featherweight divisions during the 1970s and the 1980s. He was a fan favorite, known for his brawling style, but he also had a tragic life. Bobby's first wife committed suicide after begging him to give up boxing. And one of Bobby Chacon's sons was killed in a gang-related shooting. Also, Chacon's life turned from riches to rags. After earning millions of dollars in the ring, Bobby Chacon lost most of it and was reduced to collecting cans by roadsides for resale. Bobby Chacon is also mentioned in the late Warren Zevon's 1987 song, Boom Boom Mancini, about another boxing world champion.
Fighting Bobby.
Rest in peace, Warren Zevon, and rest in peace, Bobby Chacon. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world?
Well, I know you talked about it earlier on the show, but the U.S. Open is still a top trending topic after this weekend. We have the men's and women's champions crowned. Start with the women, ladies first. Angelique Kerber of Germany. Not only the U.S. Open champion this year, but the new world number one, Serena Williams, in order to retain her title, had to go further in the tournament than Kerber, and she went out in the semis. Kerber made it to the finals, and then she ended up winning. So as of this morning, Angelique Kerber is the new world number one. And so we saw after that match on Saturday a lot of social media going on, an Instagram video with Angelique Kerber thanking all the fans for supporting her. She was in front of Arthur Ashe Stadium posing with the trophy in front of the fountains there, and everybody was taking pictures of that and posting it on social media. And in one of the interviews that she did after she won, Kerber said that she got some pre-match encouragement from someone that we talked about last week, someone by the name of Steffi Graf, the 22-time major champion and fellow German. Kerber is also German, as is Graf. So Graf wrote her before the match, said, just relax, have fun, enjoy it. And after the match, she wrote her and said, congratulations. So nice communication between those two champions.
Congratulations to Angelique Kerber. You mentioned Steffi Graf. I think she's the first world number one women's player since Steffi Graf. And at 28 years of age, Kerber is also the oldest women's player to get that number one ranking for the first time. I know Serena Williams is now older than that, and she held the number one ranking for a long time, but I think they mean the first time you actually attain that number one ranking.
Exactly. So a great achievement for her at you know, what many people say is kind of the old age of tennis, when you get in your late 20s, early 30s is when careers start to wrap up, but hers is flourishing. So congratulations to her. And actually somebody else who in his early 30s is doing quite well for himself is the men's champion, Stan Wawrinka, who beat world number one Novak Djokovic in four sets. Now, Djokovic's ranking was well secured. He's done so well for himself, there wasn't at risk. But still a great hard-fought match, but a little controversy too, because Djokovic took a medical timeout. It looked like he was cramping and had the doctor come out and work on his toes. It looked like he maybe had some blisters on his feet. So some people were calling it toe-gate, saying, was he really injured or was he just kind of faking it and trying to sit down and take a breather and get his legs stretched out? Somebody asked Stan Wawrinka about that, and he said, well, I won, so it doesn't really matter. So that's a great moment at the end of the match, though, despite that they got to the net and they are very good friends and they got to chatting a little bit, and Djokovic congratulated him. And even during the medical timeout, and I love the age that we live in, we can hear these things on the court with the microphones. Djokovic, when he was sitting there, turned to Wawrinka and said, Stan, I'm sorry, I couldn't stand, and tried to apologize for taking the medical. So even then, they were chatting back and forth about that. But, you know, they're fierce competitors, but they're very good friends, and that was on display after the match for sure.
That's interesting, Andrew, because in the semifinals, Djokovic was sort of the victim of some psychological stuff from the Frenchman, Monfils. A lot of people accused him of kind of tanking it and not giving his best effort to throw off Djokovic. But now... But good congratulations once again to Wawrinka.
Yeah, and it was, you know, the other thing that people are saying is that Djokovic had a lot of competitors retire while he was playing them. They would, you know, they end the match early, so he didn't play a lot of tennis. So for Wawrinka to come, and he's played some five-set matches in his road to the championship, to come in and win was even more impressive. But like I said, lots of respect for them, especially in the post match comments on the court as Wawrinka lifted the trophy. But he also mentioned what happened 15 years ago yesterday, which was the September 11th attacks in New York. It was actually the last thing he mentioned. He said, I just want to honor what happened 15 years ago, saying that the battle on the court paled in comparison to bigger issues in the world. And that actually takes us to another trending topic that yesterday was the anniversary of September 11th terrorist attacks. And so we saw in football, since yesterday was also the start of the football season, the first Sunday of football, we saw some players honoring September 11th, particularly Giants receivers Odell Beckham Jr. and Victor Cruz. They wore some special cleats that had some patriotic imagery on them, American flags, bald eagles, as a way to honor the victims of the September 11th attacks. Now, there is some controversy about that, however, that the NFL might actually fine them for wearing those cleats. The NFL is very strict about what you can wear on the field. Has to be part of their, you know, regulation. They have to sign off on it. And if it's not approved, you can get in trouble. And even though this was a patriotic way of honoring those victims, they said that they might get in trouble for these wearing these cleats.
Interesting.
It'll be interesting to see how the NFL handles that, if they want to try to find them and if it becomes a PR nightmare for them, or if they want to just say, you know what, they were doing a good thing, let it go. The other big story out of the first NFL Sunday was, of course, the national anthem protests. We've been talking about Colin Kaepernick protesting, and now other players are joining him, either sitting during the national anthem, taking a knee, raising their fist. So we saw a lot of that across the league yesterday for the first Sunday.
Interesting how the protests are sort of mingled with tragedy and remembrance and the whole sports social spectrum.
Yeah, and that wasn't lost on people. You had a lot of people saying they shouldn't be doing that on a day like the September 11th anniversary, and then you had people on the other side saying, you know what? What a great way to show, as Americans, we have the freedom to do this, and that's really what we're fighting for and what the men and women overseas are fighting for. So a lot of back and forth on that issue.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps up the September 12th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Keith Holmes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For a while, it looked like the 2.5-year-old civil war in South Sudan might finally be over. In August of last year, both Salva Kiir and Riek Machar signed a peace agreement to end the conflict, the terms of which confirmed Salva Kiir as president and returned Riek Machar to government as the first vice president. But just months after Riek Machar returned to South Sudan to resume his vice presidential duties, violence resumed and Machar fled. One of the most heinous aspects of South Sudan's civil war is the forced conscription of child soldiers, children younger than 18, with far too many under the age of 15. According to UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Agency, since South Sudan's civil war began in December 2013, over 16,000 children have been recruited into armed groups on both sides. UNICEF has reported on the recruitment of child soldiers since the July 7th outbreak of violence. Both sides are using various methods, including coercion and blackmail, to force parents to surrender their children to them. The United States is profoundly alarmed by the UNICEF report. Above and beyond our calls for an end to ongoing violence in South Sudan, we insist on an immediate halt to the unlawful recruitment and use of child soldiers by government and opposition forces. Individuals responsible for the unlawful recruitment or use of child soldiers for armed groups or forces may be subject to sanction under U.S. law and may be targeted for U.N. sanctions, said State Department spokesman John Kirby in a written statement. The continued unlawful recruitment and use of children in armed conflict in South Sudan is unacceptable. Eliminating the unlawful recruitment and use of child soldiers for armed groups in South Sudan is a leading priority of the United States. We remain committed to securing accountability for those who recruit and use children as soldiers.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou will discuss malaria research breakthroughs with her guest, Professor Kelly Shibali, researcher, University of Cape Town. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-7233. 3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth one-on-one conversation with Namibian President. The wide-ranging discussion will include the President's vision for the future of the Southern African nation. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.